From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This past week, the United States Postal Service announced that it would defer by 6 months its inflation-based postage adjustment of market-dominant mail. That is, that the adjustment would take place in July instead of January 2022. Furthermore, the Postal Service announced that, beginning in 2023, the federal agency would make those periodic adjustments every 6 months, rather than its current annual adjustment in January. Finally, a pending legal action by the losing bidder for the next generation postal vehicles, the Workhorse Group, dropped its challenge to the Postal Service's award of the contract to Oshkosh Defense. This follows the House of Representatives' current inclusion of $7 billion in the pending budget reconciliation legislation to finance the conversion of the Postal Service's delivery fleet to electric. On the legislative front, H.R. 3076, the Postal Service Reform Act of 2021, has yet to emerge from the House Ways and Means Committee and the House Energy and Commerce Committee. NAPS has urged the House leadership to instruct those two committees to discharge the bill and for the leadership to promptly schedule a floor vote on it. Now, let's move on to this week's guest on NAPS Chat. Jeffrey Post is a veteran congressional staffer who has had postal issues in his legislative portfolio since 2007. He began his career with former Representative Brian Bilbray of California and joined the Republican staff of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee in 2013. He served on that committee through 2017 with a short 7-month interruption as Deputy Chief of Staff to Representative Kurt Clausen of Florida. Jeff left Capitol Hill in 2017 to serve in the Congressional Affairs Office of the General Services Administration during the Trump administration, and he returned to Capitol Hill early this year as a senior Republican staff member to the Senate Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, reporting to Senator Rob Portman of Ohio. Let me make clear at the outset, Jeff does not represent the views or positions of Senator Portman on postal issues. I have asked Jeff to join me to offer his insight into the legislative process as it may impact postal issues, because we have worked for more than a decade together. Jeff and I have discussed postal matters, and we are quite familiar with them. Welcome to Naps Chat, Jeff.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be here.
Jeff, I ask this question periodically of Naps Chat guests. What is the first recollection you have of either sending or receiving mail?
That's a good question. So I actually think one of the first recollections would be when I was probably 5 or 6. I tried to get into coin collecting, and I remember sending or having my parents send away for a couple coins and just waiting for it in the mail. So, you know, running out to the mailbox every morning until that little box came so I could take a look at the first few coins I collected. Not that I ended up taking up the hobby, but it was a big deal when I was 6 years old.
Now, in your recent past, you have benefited from serving as a staff member in a member's congressional office, that is a personal office, on a House committee staff, on a Senate committee staff, and in the executive branch. I know this sounds like an essay question, but could you compare and contrast those different work experiences?
Sure. It is actually pretty impressive how different each of those experiences are. When you're in a House member's personal office, you're one of 435 offices that are all trying to process the same amount of information on any number of topics. And so very few people can afford to be specialists. Everyone is by nature a generalist. You're drinking from a fire hose of information and just trying to make sure that your boss has what they need to be able to be informed on an issue. There's very little that you're producing that's new. It's really synthesizing the information that is coming in. In House committees, it's very different. You go from being a mile wide and an inch deep to an inch wide and a mile deep. Because of the size of the House chamber, committee staff are really the ones who do most of the legwork when it comes to drafting significant bills. Personal offices may write some, but in general, committee staff are the ones who are writing the bulk of legislation, particularly major legislation. And they're the ones who really need to know issues well so that they can be called on at any time to brief anyone on the topics they cover. So it's very much like you're a producer of information in a very different way than personal office staff. And then Senate committee staff is different yet again, because the Senate is a much smaller chamber. Senate personal office staff have a better ability to get deeper and more well-informed on issues. And so as Senate committee staff, you are more working in partnership with your fellow committee staff and personal office staff on different issues. And while committee staff are generally still more of the lead in writing key pieces of legislation, it's much more a partnership with personal office staff in a lot of situations than it is in the House. And then finally, working in legislative affairs in the executive branch is an entirely different animal, where in the House or Senate, you have a fairly shallow organizational structure. So if you have an idea that's good, you can get that idea cleared pretty quickly. In the executive branch, there is, by the nature of the beast, a lot more bureaucracy, and that there are good reasons for that. But it also means that it's a little bit slower process. There's a lot more people who need to look at materials, and it's just a more thoughtful, sometimes experience, just because you have to have so many people review and sign off on things before you can really get things done. And so they're all very, very different roles, a lot more different than you might expect.
I want to touch upon one of those differences that you mentioned, and that is the House committee staff versus the Senate committee staff and the partnership, the Senate's committee staff, you indicated, with personal offices. In the House, that you mentioned that partnership really doesn't really take place, or you were silent on that related partnership if there is one. If that's the case, if there's a diminished partnership between the personal staff and committee staff in the House side, how does an individual citizen influence the crafting of legislation? Because the crafting of legislation is done by committee members, not necessarily by individual members of Congress who do not sit on that committee.
And so I think that is important. That's an important point. I think there still is very much a partnership there. And I think one thing that is true of congressional staff, anywhere you're at in Congress, is that there is a sense of willingness to listen. So even if congressional personal office staff may not be able to write the bills themselves, I can tell you that personal office staff, whether they're a member on a particular committee or not, do not hesitate to reach out and talk to the appropriate committee staff to get answers to questions. And when they have a constituent raise an issue, they will often raise that issue with the committee staff to make sure that it's heard. They will often put in individual constituents in contact with the committee staff so that they can explain their concerns directly. It is really a kind of representative environment, and I think a lot of members and congressional personal office staff are very good at making sure constituents who reach out to them that particularly have significant concerns can make sure that those concerns are heard. Additionally, it's really helpful raising thoughts, both support and opposition. Although, as some people who might not expect this, most communication to congressional offices usually don't support X, Y, or Z as opposed to support X, Y, or Z. We're kind of independent of any topic. It's just the nature of the communications that a lot of congressional offices receive. But in general, that information is still incredibly valuable for member offices, in part because it helps inform how those offices will vote on legislation. You know, again, there's 435 members of Congress. It's impossible for committee staff to talk to all 435 members before any vote. And so those personal office staff really appreciate that outreach from constituents to let them know what the key issues are that can help inform their boss's vote, and, you know, as appropriate, flagging for congressional office staff or writing their own piece of legislation. I mean, personal offices in the House write a lot of legislation that does become law. committee staff may tweak it a little bit when it comes to the committee, just to make sure it'll work well and you know, make sure to avoid unintended consequences. But there is a lot of legislation that does come out of personal office staff and personal offices as well. It really is a, despite some of the you know, the challenges that you might see on the news, like the process in general is very good at hearing voices from interested parties.
As a House staff member, you work for both former chairman of the Oversight and Reform Committee, Daryl Issa, and Jason Chaffetz. Could you enlighten us as to the different priorities each of these former chairmen had with regard to postal legislation?
Sure. And I think, as I think about that, I don't know that their priorities were all that different. I think they entered with slightly different situations. So when Chairman Issa took over the committee, there was a recognition that, particularly coming out of the Great Recession, there was a challenge with the Postal Service and what was going to happen, what reforms needed to happen. But there was something of a blank slate as to what the options were. And I think through the legislation we worked on, as a result of that, there were more options that were put on the table for people to think about. And I think Chairman Chaffetz subsequently kind of built off of some of those options. And I mean, honestly, you can actually track a fair number of provisions that were in the original ISA bill that flowed through the Chaffetz bill, that have flowed through subsequent bills that are included in both the House and Senate bills that are currently under consideration right now.
Yeah. Well, also, what was interesting was the relationship between the particularly the chairman and the ranking Democrat during the respective tenures of those two chairmen. The relationship of Jason Chaffetz with his ranking Democrat, as well as Chairman Issa with his, and how that sort of impacted the trajectory of postal legislation during those years. Now, Jeff, we hear a lot about bipartisanship with regard to postal legislation, and that sort of is an outgrowth of what we, you know, the comments we were just talking about. And generally, this characterization has been historical. In fact, S-1720, the Senate companion to H.R. 3076, was introduced by both Chairman Gary Peters of Michigan and Senator Portman. The 25 co-sponsors right now are almost equally split between Democrats and Republicans. What role does bipartisan play in the legislative postal space?
I'm mainly thinking toward now. I think the goal of bipartisanship here is to make sure that, you know, we have equal buy-in and support for this long-running American institution. Difficult to pass things on a purely partisan basis, and so it's been nice to be involved in something where there is a lot of bipartisan support for this, and I think it makes it a lot easier for something to get through. There have been partisan and bipartisan attempts in the past to get postal reform done. Unfortunately, I mean, this is my 14th year in one capacity or another working on postal reform. And, you know, we're still not there. I mean, hopefully this is the year that we get there, but it is a very difficult subject to legislate on, regardless of your political party or position, just because there are a large number of stakeholders. There's very thorny issues that we have to deal with, and trying to make sure that we are doing the best we can to balance out different interests, to make sure that people can get their mail on time, to make sure that the Postal Service competes fairly on competitive packages. It's difficult, but I think the best way you can get to the best product is something that can have bipartisan support.
Let's talk about those areas, a little bit, the areas of concern, disagreement, whatever, and I'm going to break it out into two areas. One of the areas of considerable concern is the perspective on the financial condition of the Postal Service and its operations. To what degree do you think Congress ought to be involved in these two areas?
Sorry, the final financial condition and
operational decision making.
Operational decision
of the Postal Service.
I think that that's a difficult question to give a hard and fast answer to. I think it's very difficult on a practical level for Congress to make very explicit and granular operational decisions about the Postal Service. Even at the best of time, enacting a law is a long and usually time-consuming process to get done. And the Postal Service has to operate in a very speedy and efficient manner. And so it would be difficult for Congress to say, you know, hey, this truck should leave at this time on this day, every day. Because if something changed, it would be very difficult for Congress to fix that. To put it in perspective, a few years ago, I was involved in a bill on a completely unrelated matter to the Postal Service where cleaning up an old section of code, one agency requested a change to a particular provision that was based on a law that created the former agency that this new agency used to be part of but was broken apart. So we were trying to clean up the statute to fully break apart these two laws. What we didn't realize when we passed it, had the president sign it, was that the former agency that this new agency broke off on used that same provision for a completely different reason. And so we found out within a week of getting this bill signed into law that we needed to fix it. And everyone agreed on the fix. Everyone, you know, agreed that this is what we need to do. And it still took over a year to get it done. And this was a three-line fix to a piece of legislation. And so I think from that perspective, it's very difficult for Congress to kind of operationally set some very specific goals because it's just so slow to react. But that said, it does make sense for Congress to have higher level oversight, goal setting, policy setting for the Postal Service, because at the end of the day, it is a government entity. There is government that is supporting it. There is taxpayer support of the Postal Service. And so I think making sure that we have an efficient and effective Postal Service that meets the needs of the nation, you know, and helping to set those financial parameters, I think is important.
And that taxpayer support that you mentioned, you know, it used to be that it was just basically providing for Mail for the Blind and certain types of Revenue for God provisions. But now with the pandemic-related assistance to the Postal Service and the potential funding of an electrified fleet, that federal imprint in the Postal Service is sort of growing now.
That's true. And there are other more indirect forms of taxpayer support. So, I mean, such as the Postal Service being exempt from federal tax law and items like that, where there's indirect support. There's also the question of what happens if the Postal Service is ultimately not able to pay its retiree obligations in the long run. It's not an immediate question right now, thankfully, but my expectation would be that the taxpayer would ultimately step in if that were to occur. But you know, hopefully that is well down the road if it ever happens.
Absolutely. Besides legislation, one of the key roles that the Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee plays regarding the Postal Service is review of presidential nominees to the Board of Governors and to the Postal Regulatory Commission. The committee will possibly consider a number of nominees within the next few months. Board of Governors Chair Ron Blum is definitely up, and Governor John Barga's position could be considered by the committee as well. I believe the position for Postal Regulatory Committee Chairman Mike Kubiyanda might also be subject to review. I'm not asking about the prospects for renomination or reconfirmation of any one of the potential nominees or renominees. Rather, what do you think the committee considers? What aspects or skill set do you think the committee considers or ought to consider as it deliberates over nominees to these two postal governance and regulatory institutions?
I think, you know, having just gone through this process with three postal board nominees, I think we look at a lot of things. I think one of our focuses is, do they understand the issues going before them? Do they have experience in a similar field, whether, you know, and that can vary depending on what agency you're looking at, whether it's the Regulatory Commission or the Board of Governors, and do they have a desire to try and help? You know, it's very easy to, or I shouldn't say it's necessarily very easy, but it's, you know, it's possible to get nominated for some of these positions and not necessarily have the background or the desire, motivation to do well. And so I think one of the things we're looking for, you know, is that desire to make a positive difference, you know, that spirit of public service, so that they can come in and get to know the Postal Service and see how they can help leave it better than they found it.
Jeff, I want to thank you for joining me today. Jeff Post is a senior staff member on the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Jeff, thanks for joining me on this episode of NapsChat today. I want to thank NapsChat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NapsChat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NapsChat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and healthy.
I'm going to stand right down and write myself a letter and make